Page 113. The Kingdom of Hrothgar in the Land of Venden. Pages 113 through 146. Page 114 is blank. Page 115. The ship was beached at the time of the afternoon prayer, and I begged the forgiveness of Allah for not making supplication. Yet I had not been able to do so in the presence of the Northmen, who thought my prayers to be a curse upon them, and threatened to kill me if I prayed in their sight. Each warrior in the boat dressed in the garments of battle, which were thus, first, boots and leggings of rough wool, and over this a coat of heavy fur, which reached to the knees. Over this they placed coats of mail, which all had saved me. Then each man took his sword and clasped it to his belt. Each man took up his white shield of hide and his spear. Each man placed a helmet of metal or leather upon his head. Footnote 1. In this all the men were the same except for Bullywiff, who alone carried his sword in his hand, so large was it. Footnote 1. Popular representations of the Scandinavians always show them wearing helmets with horns. This is an anachronism. At the time of Ibn Fadlan's visit, such helmets had not been worn for more than 1,000 years, since the early Bronze Age. Return to text. Page 116. The warriors looked up to the great hall of Hrothgar and marveled at its gleaming roof and skilled workmanship, and agreed that there was none like it in the world, with its lofty gables and rich carving. Yet there was no respect in their speech. At length we decamped from the ship and traveled a road paved in stone up to the great hall. The clanking of swords and the clatter of mail raised a goodly noise. After we had gone some short distance, we saw by the roadway the severed head of an ox set upon a stick. This animal was freshly killed. All the Northmen sighed and made sad faces at this portent, though it had no meaning to me. I was by now adjusted to their custom of killing some beast at the slightest nervousness of provocation, yet this ox head had a special significance. Bullywiff looked away across the fields of the lands of Hrothgar and saw there an isolated farming house of the sort that is common in Hrothgar lands. The walls of this house were of wood and sealed with a paste of mud and straw, which must be replenished after the frequent rains. The roof is thatched material and wood also. Page 117. Inside the houses there is only an earthen floor and a hearth, and the dung of animals, for the farm people sleep with their animals indoors for the warmth afforded by their bodies, and then they burn the dung for fires. Bullywiff gave an order that we should go to this farmhouse, and so we set out across the fields, which were verdant but soggy, with dampness underfoot. Once or twice the company halted to examine the ground before continuing on, but they never saw anything that mattered to them. I myself saw nothing. Yet again Bullywiff halted his company and pointed to the dark earth. Verily, I saw with my own eyes the bare imprint of a foot, indeed of many feet. They were flat and uglier than anything known to creation. At each toe there was the sharp digging mark of a horned nail or claw. Thus the shape appeared human, but yet not human. This I saw with my own eyes, and could scarcely believe the witness of my sight. Bullywiff and his warriors shook their heads at the sight, and I heard them repeat one word over and over, Wendel, or Wendlun, or some such. The meaning of the name was not known to me, and I sensed that Hergur should not be asked at this moment, for he was as apprehensive as all the rest. Page 118. We pressed on to the farmhouse, now and again seeing more of these horned footprints in the earth. Bullywiff and his warriors walked slowly, but it was not caution. No man drew his weapon. Rather, it was some dread that I did not comprehend, and yet felt with them. At length we came to the farming dwelling and entered it. In the farmhouse I saw with my own eyes the sight. There was a man of young age and graceful proportion, whose body had been torn limb from limb. The torso was here, an arm there, a leg there. Blood lay in thick pools upon the floor and on the walls, on the roof, on every surface, in such profusion that the house seemed to have been painted in red blood. Also there was a woman, in like fashion, rendered limb from limb. also a male child, an infant of 2 years or less, whose head was wrenched from the shoulders, leaving the body a bleeding stump. All this I saw with my own eyes, and it was the most fearsome sight I ever witnessed. I purged myself and was faint for an hour, purging myself yet again. Never will I comprehend the manner of the Northmen, for even as I was sick, so they became calm and dispassionate at the aspect of this horror. They viewed all they saw in quiet fashion. They discussed the claw marks upon the limbs and the manner of tearing of flesh. Page 119. Much attention was given to the fact that all the heads were missing. Also, they remarked that most devilish aspect of all, which even now I recall with trepidation. The body of the male child had been chewed by some fiendish teeth upon the soft flesh of the back of the thigh. So also had been chewed the area of the shoulder. This very horror I saw with my own eyes. The warriors of Bullywiff were grim countenanced and glowering as they departed the farmhouse. They continued to pay much heed to the soft earth about the house, noting that there were no hoof marks of horses. This was a matter of significance to them. I did not understand why, nor was I much attentive, still feeling faint of heart and sick of body. As we crossed the fields, Ethgal made a discovery which was of this nature. It was a small bit of stone, smaller than a child's fist, and it was polished and carved in crude fashion. All the warriors crowded around to examine it, I among them. I saw it to be the torso of a pregnant female. There was no head, no arms, and no legs, only the torso with a great swollen belly, and above that two pendulous swollen breasts. Footnote 2. The described figurine corresponds closely to several carvings discovered by archaeologists in France and Austria. Return to text. Page 120. I accounted this creation exceedingly crude and ugly, but nothing more. Yet the Northmen were suddenly overcome and pale and tremulous. Their hands shook to touch it, and finally Bullywiff flung it to the ground and shattered it with the handle of his sword until it lay in splintered stone fragments. And then were several of the warriors sick, and purged themselves upon the ground. And the general horror was very great, to my mystification. Now they set off for the great hall of King Hrothgar. No man spoke during our travel, which was the better part of an hour. Every one of the Northmen seemed to be wrapped in bitter and consuming thought, and yet they showed no fear any more. At length a herald upon a horse met us and barred our path. He noted the arms we carried, and the bearing of the company and of Bullywiff, and shouted a warning. Hurger said to me, "He craves to know our names, and curtly too." Bullywiff made some answer to the herald, and from his tone I knew that Bullywiff was in no mood for courtly pleasantries. Page 121. Hurger said to me, "Bullywiff tells him we are subjects of King Higlak and the kingdom of Yatlam, and we are on an errand to the King Hrothgar, and would speak to him." And Hurger added, "Bullywiff says that Hrothgar is a most worthy king," but the tone of Hurger conveyed the opposite sense of the matter. This herald bade us continue to the great hall and wait outside while he told the king of our arrival. This we did, although Bullywiff and his party were not pleased at such treatment. There was grumbling and muttering, for it is the Northmen's way to be hospitable, and this did not seem gracious to be kept outside. Yet they waited and also removed their weapons, their swords and spears, but not their armor, and they left the weapons outside the doors to the hall. Now the hall was surrounded on all sides by several dwellings in the fashion of the North people. These were long with curved sides, as at Trelberg, but they differed in the arrangement, for there were no squares here, nor were there fortifications or earthworks to be seen. Rather, from the great hall and the long houses about it, the ground sloped to a long flat green plain, here and there a farmhouse, and then beyond the hills and the edge of a forest. Page 122. I inquired of Hurger whose long houses were these, and he said to me, "Some belong to the king, and others are for his royal family, and others for his nobles, and also for the servants and lower members of his court. He said also that it was a difficult place, though I did not comprehend his meaning to this. Then we were allowed entry into the great hall of King Hrothgar, which verily I say is to be counted one of the marvels of all the world, and all the more for its presence in the crude north country. His hall is called, among the Hrothgar peoples, by the name of Heorot, for the Northmen give the names of peoples to the things of their life, to the buildings and boats, and especially to the weapons. Now I say, this Heorot, the great hall of Hrothgar, was as large as the Caliph's main palace, and richly inlaid with silver and even some gold, which is most rare in the north. On all sides were designs and ornaments of the greatest splendor and richness of artistry. It was truly a monument to the power and majesty of King Hrothgar. This King Hrothgar sat at the distant end of Heorot Hall, a space so vast that he was so far we could hardly discern him. Standing behind his right shoulder was the same herald who had halted us. Page 123. The herald made a speech which Hergur told me was thus: "Here, O king, is a band of warriors from the kingdom of Jotlam. They are newly arrived from the sea, and their leader is a man of the name Bulliwif. They beg leave to tell you of their errand, O king. Do not forbid them entry. They have the manner of earls, and from his bearing their chieftain is a mighty warrior. Greet them as earls, O King Hrothgar." Thus we were bid approached the King Hrothgar. King Hrothgar appeared a man near death. He was not young. His hair was white, his skin was very pale, and his face was grooved with sorrow and fear. He regarded us with suspicion, wrinkling his eyes, or perhaps he was near blind. I do not know. Finally, he broke into speech, which Hergur says was thus: "I know of this man, for I have sent for him on a hero's mission. He is Bulliwif, and I knew him as a child when I traveled across the waters to the kingdom of Jotlam. He is the son of Higlak, who was my gracious host, and now this son comes to me in my time of need and sorrow." Hrothgar then called for the warriors to be summoned to the great hall, and gifts brought and celebrations made. Bulliwif then spoke a long speech that Hergur did not translate for me, since to speak when Bulliwif spoke would be a disrespect. Page 124. However, the meaning was this, that Bulliwif had heard of these troubles of Hrothgar, that he was sorry for these troubles, and that his own father's kingdom had been destroyed by these same troubles, and that he had come to save the kingdom of Hrothgar from the evils that had beset them. Still, I did not know what the Northmen called these evils, or how they thought of them, though I had viewed the handiwork of the beasts that tore men to pieces. King Hrothgar spoke again in some haste. I took from the manner of his speaking that he wished to say some words before all his warriors and earls arrived. He said thus, from Hergur: "O Bulliwif, I knew your father when I was myself a young man, new to my throne. Now I am old and heartsick, my head bows. My eyes weep with shame to acknowledge my weakness. As you see, my throne is almost a barren spot. My lands are becoming a wild place. What the fiends have wrought to my kingdom I cannot say. Often at night my warriors, brave with drink, swear to topple the fiends. And then, when the bleak light of dawn creeps over the misty fields, we see bloody bodies everywhere. Thus is the sorrow of my life, and I shall speak no more of it." Page 125. Now a bench was brought out and a meal set before us, and I inquired of Hergur what was the meaning of the fiends of which the king spoke. Hergur was angry and said I was never to ask again. That evening there was a great celebration, and King Hrothgar and his queen Wailu, in a garment dripping gemstones with gold, presided over the nobles and warriors and earls of the kingdom of Hrothgar. These nobles were a paltry lot. They were old men and drank overmuch, and many were crippled or wounded. In the eyes of all of them was the hollow stare of fear, and there was hollowness in their merriment too. Also there was the son named Wiglaf, of whom I have earlier spoken, the son of Hrothgar, who murdered three of his brothers. This man was younger and slender, with a blond beard, and with eyes that never settled on anything, but moved about here and there constantly. Also, he never met the gaze of another. Hergur saw him and said, "He is a fox." By this he meant that he was a slippery and changeable person of false demeanor, for the North people believe the fox is an animal that can assume any form it pleases. Now in the middle portion of the festivities, Hrothgar sent his herald to the doors of Heorot Hall, and this herald reported that the mist would not descend that night. Page 126. There was much happiness and celebration over this announcement that the night was clear. All were pleased save Wiglaf. At a particular time, the son Wiglaf rose to his feet and said, "I drink honor to our guests, and especially Bullywiff, a brave and true warrior who has come to aid us in our plight, although it may prove too great an obstacle for him to overcome." Hrugr whispered these words to me, and I caught that it was praise and insult in one breath. All eyes turned to Bullywiff for his response. Bullywiff stood and looked to Wiglaf, and then said, "I have no fear of anything, even the callow fiend that creeps at night to murder men in their sleep." This I took to refer to the Wendel, but Wiglaf turned pale and gripped the chair in which he sat. "Do you speak of me?" Wiglaf said in a trembling tongue.